from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for driving us into the weekend. It is Friday, May 12th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, we'll be previewing a big weekend of sport. In Gaelic Games, Ross Munley will chat through the key battles in two provincial finals as well as 8 Tailteann Cup ties. Shane McGrath looks forward to the clash of Waterford and Clare in Thurles, as well as the final round of the Joe McDonagh, with plenty on the line there. Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan are standing by to chat all things association football with a packed weekend of League of Ireland and English Premier League action on the cards. We'll hear from Leinster boss Leo Cullen and bring you all the URC semi-final team news. Plus, we'll cast our eye over the latest sports headlines. Busy hour ahead, and if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet us at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, hello there, good evening. It's great to have your company on this Friday evening. I'm in the company of Alan Colley in studio. Al, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Shane. Yourself? Sun is shining, Friday night, League of Ireland night. Can't beat it.
Well, League of Ireland night tonight for most, except for the Game On Derby tomorrow. That's the big one.
I like that one, Shane. The Game On Derby. Call it.
Listen, you know I'm naturally pessimistic about Shelford. So.
You're one of the most... I know all fans can be quite pessimistic about their teams, but you're... excessively pessimistic, I find, at times.
Yeah, Shelburne in those European positions, no right to be fighting.
Going great, doing really well.
So far, so good. We'll see about tomorrow. We'll see. We will get to that in due course. We've a couple of news headlines to fly through. We'll be chatting League of Ireland in detail. Tony Dunhill's at Daly Mount as well for the big one this evening, first against third. We will get the football headlines in due course. A bit of cycling news. Ireland's Eddie Dunbar finished ninth in the grueling seventh stage of the Giro d'Italia today. The Corkman crossed the line 3 minutes and 10 seconds after stage winner David Bay. Ben Healy was 73rd on the seventh stage after finishing in a time of 6:15.41 and is 72nd overall. Denmark's Andreas Lechnusant leads the way overall with a 28 second lead. In the cricket, Ireland ended on 319 for 6 off their 50 overs in Chelmsford in their ODI against Bangladesh. Harry Tector finishing on 140. That included 10 sixes, the most sixes for Ireland in a ODI international. As I scramble to get the latest score at the moment, Bangladesh has 66 for 2 off 13 overs. So we will keep you updated with that throughout the hour. And then in rugby, it was a good morning for the Irish women's sevens team. They got off to the perfect start at the World Rugby Sevens Series in Toulouse as they bid for automatic qualification for the Olympic Games. The team entered the final event in fifth place in the standings, which is enough to get them to France next year. They made an ideal start in their opening match against host France, running in 4 tries, an exceptional first half, and finished up 27-7 winners. The team's next match is this evening at 7:05, just as we come off air against Australia, who beat Brazil 52-0 this morning, with Ireland's final pool game against Brazil tomorrow morning at the precise time of 9:43 a.m. I like the way the sevens fixtures are bang on the button. Ireland men opened their campaign with a 14-12 win over Samoa, but were defeated by Australia 12-5 this afternoon in their second Pool D match. Staying with rugby, because it's a big weekend, it's a big day tomorrow. 2 URC semi-finals, and their team news in from both Leinster, Munster, Connacht and indeed the Stormers. There are 4 personnel changes and 2 positional switches to the Munster side that won away to Glasgow Warriors in last week's quarter-final. Keith Earls recovered from his groin injury earlier this week and makes his first start since his 200th Munster appearance against Sharks 3 weeks ago. Craig Casey, Ben Healy and John Hodnett also come into the side, with Tadhg Byrne moving into the second row as Jack Crowley starts at inside centre. Captain Peter O'Mahony and Dermot Barron both came through training this week and are named in the starting 15. Leinster welcome back Robbie Henshaw and Ronan Kelleher from injury. Scrum half Luke McGrath captains the team for the 5:30 p.m. kickoff at the Aviva Stadium, while Jimmy O'Brien starts at fullback with Tommy O'Brien and Dave Kearney named on the wings. Charlie Nottie and Henshaw are partnered in the centre, with Harry Byrne and McGrath completing the back line. And that tees me up nicely to play in a bit of Leo Cullen audio, who was on media duty a little bit earlier on today.
You know, we got to this stage last year, semi-final, we came unstuck against the Bulls, you know, after a huge win against Glasgow the week before. So again, we don't want to fall into that trap this year. You know, we've had a decent win against the Sharks, so again, it's good having some of that fresh energy coming in. Again, we know we have a game for next week as well, and it's difficult, yeah, like, but you just need to make sure you're staying focused on the job at hand, one game at a time, and all that sort of soundbites you'd hear all the time. But yeah, no, the Munster game, Derby game, it's like folks to mind usually straight away. And there's, for players, there's, they understand there's a much broader picture there as well. If you think at some point, I don't know, there'll be some sort of World Cup squad picked, and look at some of the individual battles there alone. So whatever about competition in this URC to get into a final, you know, with the Irish teams go up against each other's Derby game, and there's a hell of a lot more at stake always, isn't there?
There certainly is a lot at stake tomorrow. 5:30 kickoff in the Aviva Stadium, match you can see live on RT2 television and the RT player, and listen to live commentary on Saturday Sport. Another match you can listen to live commentary on is in Connacht against the Stormers in the first semi-final. That one kicks off at 3 p.m. Irish time. The Connacht management team have named an unchanged 23 for their semi-final against the Stormers in Cape Town. Jack Carty captains the side, while it will be a 99th appearance for Tom Farrell, and Jack Ainger will earn his 50th cap for the province if called upon from the bench. A win for Connacht would see them reach a major final for the second time in their history after the Pro 12 success of 2016, with the decider taking place at either the Aviva Stadium or Thomond Park on Saturday, May 27, dependent on whether Leinster or Munster will be in that final. So both matches live commentary on Saturday Sport Radio 1 tomorrow should be two crackers. But as you've already heard from Alan Colley's in studio, and Tony O'Donoghue is on the line as we begin our League of Ireland chat. Tony, you are at Dalymount Park for first against third, Bohemians against Derry City, in a match that we all hope and expect should be a bit of a cracker.
Sunny Dalymount Park as well. It's absolutely glorious here at the moment. The flags fluttering in the breeze. St. Peter's Church ahead of me. The floods like looking down on a pitch that looks great, I have to say, in very good nick. Now, the pitch last week at Talla, I was only commenting that it was so good. Possibly why we got such a good game. One of the reasons we got such a good game. But in fairness to the groundsmen here at Dalymount Park, it's looking well tonight as well. And hopefully that does set us up for a decent game, as you say, first against third.
Absolutely. Alan Colley, to continue this conversation of first against third, a lot on the line. Dependent on this result, and if Rovers win, Rovers could end this evening top of the table. Mm. However, listen, if you're Decky Devine or if you're Rory Higgins, they're not going to pay too much attention to that. They're focusing at the task at hand. What are going to be the key battles here, and who's going to come out on top, in your opinion, Al?
Yeah, I think it's just important from Bohemians' point of view, Shane, that they bounce back with a positive reaction. Obviously, we covered the game last week, and I thought they played quite well for large spells. Got off to a shaky enough start, but once they grew into the game, got a foothold in the game, I thought they played really well. Obviously, they were unlucky with the contentious penalty decision, as we all know, and then Rovers scored the second to kill the game off. So I think Declan can take a lot of positives from the game last week in Talla, but it's really important that they bounce back in a positive way. Obviously, they're playing against Derry, who are a very good side. They themselves were beaten by Shamrock Rovers only two games back, but they showed that positive reaction last week when they bounced back, and an all important win. It doesn't really matter how they got the win, but they bounced back with one against Drogheda, and I think that was hugely important just to stay on the coattails and stay in, as I say, in that race, because we all saw Shamrock Rovers last week and we've seen them over the last few weeks, Shane. Their form certainly looks ominous for all the other teams. They've won 7 of their last 8 and drew the other one against Shelburne. So I think it's just important for Derry City and Bohemians to hang in there, stay on their coattails for as long as possible, be in a position where they're on their coattails coming into those European games, that hopefully it might be some sort of a distraction for Shamrock Rovers. But I think so far Declan can be absolutely delighted with how Bohemians have done.
Mm. I think it's important to point out as well that Bows have already beaten Derry this season, and that was a 1-0 win up at the Brandywell, a Dean Williams penalty. So, I mean, I don't think Derry will hold too many fears for Bohemians, because under Declan Devine this year, they've been terrific, you'd have to say. And they have responded to each loss by winning the next game. So tonight will be a big test, obviously. You know, I think they came away from Talla feeling hard done by, feeling that perhaps the referees might have gone with them. Sometimes I wonder with these managers and their outbursts after the game, you can't change the result and you can't change the decision of the referee in the game that's just been played, but maybe you can pile on the pressure for this week's officials, and when a contentious decision comes around, you think maybe the referees have heard all the noise, have watched the game, and will be thinking twice. For the home side, Declan Devine is still without James Akintunde, but he'll be hoping that his side have enough firepower tonight to keep them at the top of the table come the end of the of the evening. For Derry, well, they'll still have to plan without Patrick McElhinney, Ciarán Harkin and Colm Whelan. I'm hearing, though, Mark Connolly and Cameron Dunmigan are almost ready to return. We'll see whether they'll be added to the start list or even the squad this evening. And it's certainly looking like, on a night like this, with a Dalymount Park heaving, like it's going to be a great evening.
Hopefully, certainly is going to be a great evening. My final question just on this, because I do want to kind of get your thoughts, gentlemen, on the other matches this evening. Alan, Tony's point there about the comms and the referees, do you think that sticks with them in their minds in any way? Or like all this, like, oh, outside noise doesn't affect me, and even talk to managers, like, oh, I don't read the paper, etc. Like,
believe me, they read every paper and they hear every comment that gets made, Shane, 100%. And of course they hear the noise. Like, it'd be impossible to stay away from it now, like, you know, especially with I suppose social media and everything. So of course they hear everything, discussion and chat goes on. You would like to think they would take it in a way where they feel as though if they have made a mistake that they would take the criticism. I know criticism can be hard to take at times for people, but if they're kind of seeing it in a more constructive way, that they might feel as though they might have made a mistake and hope to improve things, that's the way you would want it. You wouldn't want to see them react in the other way, where they feel as though I want to get one over. I don't think that's the case with the officials, and I've never felt that all the years I played and even watching them now. And obviously I'm very critical of the officials at times, but I they're making genuine honest mistakes. I have to 100% feel that, and I do feel that. But I do think last ones, just the nature of a game so important at the top of the table, and I know they're not going to get every decision wrong, but I just think that was one that you have to get right, Shane, and it was really disappointing, not only from Bohemians' point of view, I think from everyone around the league. Like, it's not just a Bohemians issue. Like, a lot of teams have suffered with refereeing decisions throughout the course of the season so far, and we want to be talking about the football and the brilliant players and the stadiums and, as Tony said, the pitches and all those kind of things. You don't want to be harping on about refereeing decisions after every match.
It's the greatest league in the world, though, isn't it? I've just been talking about referees, and a car pulled up alongside me in the Dalymount car park, and of course it's Paul McLaughlin, Emmett Dynan, Alan Lynch,
Are they listening?
Maybe,
Tony,
they've been listening.
Doorstep them there, Tony. We'll get an interview on the fly. All right, let's talk about the football then. So, Bo's Derry this evening, and that will have a lot of repercussions to where the league title may go later this season. But Shamrock Rovers are in UCD. Rovers have not conceded a goal to UCD in the last 8 encounters and have won the last 13 league meetings between the sides. They're banging form at the moment, Tony. They've really recovered from that rocky spell at the start.
Yeah, and it's funny because during that rocky spell, if you want to call it that, well, Stephen Bradley was as cool as a cucumber. He never got concerned, or certainly didn't give the appearance in his media interviews of being concerned, because he said they were playing well. He was happy with how they were playing. They weren't getting wins. They weren't losing very often either, only once. But you know, they weren't firing on all cylinders as far as we expected a team going for 4 in a row. You know, clearly the most consistent, the best team in the country over the last number of years. But he was calm, and, you know, the culture in the club was calm, and now they've sort of hit their groove. And yeah, with the weather getting better and the pitches better, and you know, the end of the season in England and around a lot of the leagues in Europe, we will be thinking about Europe. You know, Shamrock Rovers will be seeded now, and their season and maybe the future of Jack Byrne and all sorts of things will be dependent very much on how they do in Europe this year. UCD are a decent side, and you know, they've caught people out before. They're missing Mark Dignam tonight, but you know, this will be a test for Shamrock Rovers. But often at the Belfield Bowl, it's particularly when it's their nearest neighbours, Shamrock Rovers, it is like a home match for Rovers. I'm sure it'll be sold out tonight, but you know, 90-95% of the people there will be supporting the team in hoops.
Yeah, I think that 1% might be Peter Brannigan of RT Sport Online. I think he's the only UCD fan I know at the moment. But yeah, no, listen, UCD is, I've been there many times when Shelburne are playing, and they've grinded out results as well. So it's they are a tough side to come up against, despite their league position at the moment. Alan, Tony mentioned Europe there and the race for Europe. So Dundalk in fourth, Shells in fifth, Pats in sixth and Sligo in seventh. You're off to Richmond Park after this evening for Pats Drogheda. Interestingly, and this is my bit of nugget that I've stolen from the online preview on the RT website, Drogheda boss Kevin Doherty has not beaten the Saints since taking over. The only side he has yet to taste victory against. Will that change this evening?
I'd love to say it would for Kevin, but I don't think so, Shane, to be honest with you, because you look at Drogheda and their early season form has been really good, and Kevin, to be fair, has done a brilliant job on very limited resources, as we know. But you look at over the last six games, they've lost four and drawn the other two, so they're without a win in six games, and I just feel they're getting to that stage where they're being a little bit stretched with the squad resources and stuff like that. So Pats, to be fair, obviously we all know what happened with Tim, but we're talking there about people bouncing back with a positive reaction. They went to Cork and that was a massive win for them. John Daly, who of course stepped into the breach last week, big win for them, big win for the club. So they'll be looking to kick on and obviously pick up another 3 points. And I do think at home as well, I'm heading over to Richmond. As much as I'd love to see Drogheda get a result, I think Pats will beat them tonight.
Okay. Interesting, I think, though, that John Daly this week, he was more or less putting his hand up saying he wants the job full time. Excuse me. He's in there as an interim, so to speak. He's in there because of the turmoil at Inchicoram, because Tim Clancy lost his job. But, you know, unless the club quickly move, that leaves us in a situation, a state of chassis, really, and that's not great for players. They need to know who the boss is. So he's either going to be given the job, and he should be given it straight away if that's the decision of the hierarchy at Inchicore, or else it should be made clear there's someone else coming in, because the longer, and that could be, the same could be said for Cork City, by the way. But, you know, tonight might be a night. Owen Doyle is suspended. Joe Redmond, who's probably been Pat's most consistent player, Danny Rogers out. You know, this could be the time for Drogheda to catch the Saints on the hop.
I'm not sure what your view, Tony, is, but this doesn't really sit well with me, and there's been a few cases of it. And obviously John Daly, I know he's a young coach and young aspiring manager, wants to get an opportunity, wants to get a chance, but he came in with Tim and he's part of that regime that they deemed as a failure. So how can he sit there then? And obviously, as I say, I know he probably wants a chance, wants an opportunity, but just the optics of it, that Tim has left, yet he's there and now he's putting his hand up and wants to be the manager. To me, that's not right.
Well, we're in a different situation to let's say, the UK, England or Scotland, if you look at the economic factors. I mean, you know, John Daly has come over here, his family are still in Scotland, and he's looking for a gig. He can't afford to just leave a job. Tim has left the job, and you'd like to think and hope that his contract will be honoured all the way through. This is John Daly's opportunity. And I see where you're coming from. You talk about loyalty and you think a managerial team should go en masse. It happened with Tottenham Hotspur, with Stellini staying on, which was extraordinary to me as well. And it's not ideal, but I have sympathy for John Daly or anybody trying to make a living in this greatest league in the world.
Mm. You mentioned Cork City as well. We do have to wrap up our League of Ireland chat. We're going to chat Premier League. Fergal Brennan is standing by. But Tony, just on the Cork City situation, do you feel that might be resolved in terms of a permanent manager coming in anytime soon?
Well, I think it should be. I'll say the same as I said for St. Pat's. The longer this is left in abeyance, the more uncertainty there'll be, and that translates to the players. Cork need a firm decision made on this. They need to strengthen. There's no question about that. It's up to Dermot Usher, the owner, to not leave this lie around too long, and Liam Buckley as well. And the longer Liam Buckley is in the dugout as the interim manager, the less time he has in trying to strengthen the squad. So that's really important. I mean, they have to stop conceding goals, though. 13 in the last four matches. Maybe it's a good time to play Dundalk there without Benson, Sloggett, Mountney, Louis Ansley as well. But going to Oriel Park has never been easy over the last number of years for any Cork City side, even in the glory days. It's going to be another tough one for them tonight.
Yeah, four defeats in a row for Dundalk. Now, they have followed up that by 11 points out of 15, but it will be interesting to see what Dundalk team shows up in Oriel this evening. Tony, in a word, call the game on Derby tomorrow, Sligo Rovers v Shelburne.
Oh, I don't want to upset either of you. I'll be in Talca Park tomorrow for Shelburne Women against DLR Waves. I didn't nearly find that one easier to call. Sligo have been in terrific form, I'll have to say. Max Matta, I have to agree with Daniel McDonald, I have to say, and wonder why he didn't win the Player of the Month or somebody from the Premier Division when Ronan Coughlin in the First Division won it. But that's a soccer writer's issue. Maybe I'll bring it up at the next meeting. Yeah, with Sligo having home advantage, Shelburne are flying. I mean, they really have an identity now over Damien Duff. I'll go for a draw and try and keep you guys away from each other's throats.
That's all right, Tony. That's all right.
As lovely as ever, Tony.
Yeah. Tony did mention the Shells DLR match tomorrow. Just to mention a big congratulations to Galway's Jenna Slattery, who's won the League of Ireland Women's Player of the Month award today. And anyone that is in the Talca Park area, 2 p.m. kickoff for Shells DLR Waves tomorrow in the LOIW Premier Division. Okay, let's bring Fergal Brennan into the conversation then, because he's been standing patiently by as we turn our attention to the Premier League. And Fergal, let us start in near chronological order. The early kickoff tomorrow, Leeds v Newcastle. And a story today, which I wasn't aware of, that Allardyce, when he got the boot from Newcastle, in his payoff, he enabled him to buy a lavish villa on Spain's Costa Blanca, swiftly dubbed Casa St. James. But the Leeds manager has not forgotten the massive, massive career setback Allardyce has played in. Any talk of old scores being settled with Eddie Howe's Champions League chasing team visit Ellen Road on Saturday, but there is little doubt that Allardyce would enjoy sticking a metaphorical two fingers in the directions of those travelling Newcastle fans. Will he be able to do it, Fergal?
I think he's got a chance. I think based on the the reports that you mentioned, he should be called Small Prince Sam instead of Big Sam, because nobody kind of gets these little bonuses and these little deals quite like him as a Premier League manager. He's had so many jobs and so many situations where he's kind of been almost bulletproof and still managed to come out of it with a fairly solid reputation. He has to get something. I don't think anyone really expected a result against Manchester City last weekend, and obviously all the attention on him saying that he's as good as anybody in the Premier League as a manager. That was all a big show to see if maybe, just maybe, something could happen. He needs something this weekend, and Newcastle have wobbled a little bit in the last couple of weeks as they look to kind of close the door on top four. And looking at the run-in, very strangely, and I still think Leeds are in huge danger of going down, I think they've probably got the most straightforward run-in. Newcastle at home, West Ham away, who you'd imagine will be safe and could be looking at a European final. And then Tottenham at home on the last day, we don't know what their fate is going to be. He has to get something tomorrow, because in terms of winnable games, this is on that list. As good as Newcastle have been for the bulk of the season, it'll be a revved up Elland Road. He's had a full week now of working with the team after the City game, which obviously was a bit of a free hit. They have to get something tomorrow. If at the end of that game, if they lose and then one or two other results go against them this weekend, then I think they could be gone. That is just how tight it is.
Yeah, it certainly is. I was like kind of looking at the fixtures there. Would you agree with that run-in, Alan, I suppose? So Leeds currently 19th, 30 points, minus 25 goal difference. Leicester 18th, same amount of points, minus 15 goal difference. So a big difference there. And then Everton Forest just above us, Southampton pretty much doomed, as we nearly said for the last couple of weeks. But what's your take on kind of...
Yeah, I would kind of agree largely with Fergal, to be fair. But tomorrow's game is huge, and regardless of the West Ham and obviously the Spurs game, if they don't get anything out of tomorrow, I think that could be it. Because you look at the results during the week, obviously Forest, and one win bounces you up. That one win is so valuable, Shane, because none of them are in form. So the wins are so rare that one win, as I say, can get you out of trouble. So I can't see Leeds beat Newcastle. That's the thing. Like, they're all pinning their hopes on this game tomorrow, saying they have to win. But I just can't see how they can get a result against Newcastle. They're so poor, Leeds. And Newcastle are very, very good. I know they lost against Arsenal last week, but I thought it was absolutely fantastic match, and I thought Newcastle were brilliant in the game as well for large periods, and Arsenal were terrific. But I just can't see how they can get a result. They're so poor, Leeds, regardless of Big Sam. And I know he put a bit of shape on the team last week against City. They were never going to get a result, but there was a bit of a shape on the team. But I just can't see it. I think Leeds are doomed.
Seems that way, and I would agree with you, to be honest, Alan. Yeah. Where are we? We mentioned Newcastle there and the race for Europe. Fergal, Manchester United are at home to Wolves, and the corresponding fixture last season came in January 2022, ended in a 1-0 defeat for Manchester United, a first league victory for Wolves at Old Trafford since 1980. The bigger picture now, when we're talking about run-ins, can Manchester United handle the pressure now, given their stop start's the wrong word, but just given their indifferent form, I suppose?
it is going to be difficult, obviously, between now and the end of the season. And both them and Newcastle have got Liverpool banging at the door. They're the most informed team in the Premier League after Man City this season. And Jurgen Klopp's playing a very straight hand in saying that, you know, we just want to stay in the race and want to make sure that we're in the mix for the last couple of games of the season. He knows exactly what he's doing, and he knows exactly that Liverpool are in a position that if United or Newcastle slip again, that they can take advantage. I think the game in hand that Newcastle and United both have will probably be the decisive factor. And yes, United have not been great in the last couple of weeks, but you want to be, the old adage of, you want to be playing against teams that don't really have much left to play for. Wolves are safe, they're nowhere near Europe, and then they play Chelsea at home in their game in hand before the final weekend. We obviously don't know what kind of team is going to turn up with Frank Lampard in charge, but Fulham at home on the last day as well, you'd imagine they'll be okay. I think if there's going to be a fight for fourth, it's Newcastle and Liverpool, because Newcastle have got some difficult games between now and the end of the season. They're obviously facing teams that are down the bottom of the table. I'd agree with Alan in terms of Leeds, but it'll be a tough game. I wouldn't discount Leeds maybe getting a point. I don't think they'll beat them. And then Newcastle have got some tough games, whereas Liverpool, they've got the momentum. They've got this winning run that they're on, and Newcastle haven't been here before. And I think it could be really, really interesting between now and the end of the season.
Liverpool away to Leicester on Monday evening. And interestingly, for Sky Sports viewers, they are doing a segment pre-match on VAR. So you're able to listen back to the major decisions and the communication between the VAR officials and the referee. It's a pilot, apparently, and if it works, then going forward, they'll be able to review possible weekend decisions on the Monday, but won't be able to hear it live because that's a FIFA directive and they're trialling it in the Club World Cup. Just I'm plugging Sky Sports for some reason.
Why, Shane?
Really,
why?
If anything, really, there. So we'll move swiftly on. Manchester City, Pep Guardiola doesn't like Eurovision, which is happening on Saturday, because...
I don't like Eurovision either.
Well, okay.
I loved it with Johnny Logan. I don't like it anymore.
Game on. Pro Sky Sports anti-Eurovision. This is not the view of 2FM. Fergal Brennan, Everton, Manchester City, 2 p.m. on Sunday, because it wasn't able to be played on Saturday because of policing and security issues, I'd imagine, with Eurovision in Liverpool. Yeah. Pep was given out, obviously, because he's got the Champions League match on. Do you feel there might be a couple of changes for Manchester City, and this might be a bit of an opportunity for Everton?
I think there has to be changes, given the fact that the games are just racking up and racking up, coming back from Madrid and then facing Real Madrid in midweek. This game being changed at short notice, I living in Liverpool, I've got a little bit of sympathy for Guardiola, because the city has gone absolutely Eurovision mad. But in terms of the change, I just think you kind of have to roll with it a little bit, because it was decided a while back, and City have had the ability to make those changes in terms of their planning. As for Everton, it's difficult to see them getting anything. I think in the past, in the David Moyes era, they had a good record against City. That's obviously changed with Guardiola coming in. I think in terms of the Champions League, that will obviously be on his mind, but he knows that they're not in the same position as Real Madrid. Carlo Ancelotti's effectively said he's going to rest the majority of his team for their game this weekend. Barcelona are on the verge of winning the league in Spain, so he's got all eyes on the Champions League next week. I do still think Everton will get out of it based on the games to come, but I don't necessarily see that coming this weekend. One bit of news that did come from Sean Dyche's press conference today relating to Seamus Coleman, he said that the operation was a success. He didn't go into details in terms of his recovery or his rehabilitation, but he said he does expect him to be fit again for next season. And that obviously hints that there will be a contract extension. Nothing confirmed, obviously, at this stage. He said that we're in ongoing talks, but the likelihood is another 12 months will be on offer, providing the rehab goes well and Seamus Coleman will get the chance to break the Everton Premier League record next season, which I think everybody will be pleased to see.
Yeah, great news. But just on the game, I think Everton could get something out of this, Shane, because he'll definitely make changes. Guardiola, what's to come on Wednesday night, and obviously we're all looking forward to that, the second semi-final, the second leg. But because Everton did so well against Brighton as well, I thought that was a fantastic result for them. And just an observation from during the week, right? He brought Yeramina back into the team, and you look at Rudiger playing against Haaland. If you go back to kind of old school football, and when I say old school football, I don't mean 25, 30 years ago. I mean even 10, 15 years ago. Centre halves who weren't basically a centre half years ago, wasn't very good on the ball, but he could kick and fight and head and do all those nasty things, hence why he was playing centre half, not centre midfield. Okay. Nowadays all the players are technically very good, and you see the likes of the centre halves, all ball players, and want to kind of play out from the back. John Stones, you look at Rudiger during the week, Rudiger is the only man that I've seen battle with Haaland, fight him, kick him, pinch him, do all the things that the centre forwards hate, that you used to see in a bygone era with the likes of a Vidic or someone as aggressive as that in their defending. You never see that nowadays, and that's why Haaland's a phenomenal player, as we all know, and an absolute superstar, but he's trampled all over the players in the Premier League centre halves. And if I was a centre half, the first thing I'd be doing is looking to battle him and fight him and be aggressive with him. None of them have seemed to have done that, and like, you're kind of going through in the Premier League now, who was the type that might do that? Like, there's probably very few centre halves in that mould. But certainly you look at Yuri Mina, has the physical presence, a big monster of a man. Now, athletically, whether he's able to keep up with Haaland, we don't know, but don't get into a race with him, get into a battle and a fight with him. And I know it's easier said than done, but you look at that template from Rudiger during the week, he was absolutely fantastic, and he's the only one I've seen do that to Haaland all year. And it might just be a template for centre halves going forward.
Certainly will. We've seen how it can be successful. And we'll be interested to see if anyone does follow suit. Sinead, gentlemen, unfortunately that is all we have time for. Fergal Brennan, thank you very much. Alan Colley, thank you very much. Very best of luck to Sligo Rovers tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I don't know, we'll see. We'll be texting tomorrow night.
Our final bit of news, speaking of ball playing centre halves, John O'Shea is to leave his position as a first team coach at Stoke City. The club released a statement a short while ago. The 42-year-old, who joined the Potters in July 2022, is stepping aside to focus on his commitments with the Republic of Ireland. O'Shea said, "I would like to thank everyone at Stoke City for their help and guidance last season, and wish the club the very best of luck in the future." So interesting to see what happens. John O'Shea. We are going to be chatting Gaelic games after the break, and specifically Gaelic football with Ross Munley.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Friday evening's Game On. Ross Munley is on the line now as we turn attention to Gaelic football. And Ross, let's just dive straight in, because we've two provincial finals and eight Tailteann Cup matches to rattle through. Let us begin in Ulster. Armagh against Derry. Armagh technically the home side, even though it is in Clonus. What do Armagh have to do right in order to upset Derry?
Good evening, Shane. Yeah, I think they have to do a lot right. I'd start off by saying there's going to be a lot of excitement in their camp, and they're going to a place that they haven't been in a long time, and fair play to Kieran McGeaney and his persistency. After 9 years, Armagh finally break through to an Ulster final. So that in itself is going to be a wonderful experience, but they won't have the... They probably won't have the calmness and the routine that Derry will have going into it, given that they're looking for two in a row. So that is exciting from an Armagh perspective, but it's got to be managed in the right way as well. Like, they had an ideal run to the final in terms of their preparation. I think they've played Division 3 teams pretty much going through there. So this will be a different kettle of fish altogether this weekend. And I think the big word for Armagh is discipline. Not discipline in terms of the physicality at all. It's because of the way Derry set up, and because Derry are prepared to go 15-on-15 in Armagh's half of the field. I think that's where the concentration and discipline are of huge importance. And a big factor in this game is the referee, David Goff, because as we know, he is one of the most consistent referees around. He will watch out for fouls in front of the goals, off the ball, from defenders, on attackers, and he's also very disciplined in allowing a swarm tackle up until a certain point of physicality. So if you take the ball into contact, David Goff will allow you to be challenged, and challenged fairly robustly. So they're all considerations on the day, and it'll mean the opportunity when Derry go one-on-one inside Armagh's half on the Armagh players, the ability to get the second man in there to dispossess is going to be a key opportunity for Armagh in the game.
Do Armagh have that patience and resilience and that kind of mental attitude to be able to do everything that you've said there, and indeed find that balance to have the firepower to pierce such a solid Derry defensive rear guard?
I think, you know, in Division 1 this year, Armagh struggled. And, you know, I think they were only averaging 14 scored points total a game. And since they've gone through the Ulster Championship, because we're playing the lower opposition, they've been shooting the lights out. And I think that the point you raise is really valid, because it's so much about discipline this weekend. There's no doubt about it that if they turn over Derry and they counterattack, they can do so at huge pace, and they can really punish teams. You would have to say Derry, all the advantages are with Derry going in this weekend in terms of performance. It's familiarity. They've an excellent game plan. They're the first ones to kind of deploy this, and everybody else at the moment is trying to catch up and match them and figure out how they do what they do so effectively. And like for anyone tuning in to the game the weekend, like, don't be surprised if you see some of the Derry players only touching the ball maybe 3-4 times a half, because their role is not to get on the ball and not to score, it's to create space for other players. So what Derry are doing at the moment is really selfless. They'll have a couple of big scores on the day. Like, for example, the last day out, Armagh had 12 different scores, and 10 of those scores alone only got one score each. So that'll tell you the kind of Armagh kind of bring that chaos where they can bring scores from many different from many different players, whereas Derry are far more calculated and far more planned out. So it's going to be a fascinating battle. And as I say, David Goff's style of refereeing is going to be he's very consistent, and it's going to be a factor because he will allow the game to be physical.
In your view, Ross, who's going to prevail in this fascinating Ulster final battle?
I think Derry, just because everybody else seems.
And I fortunately believe we've lost Ross there. We do have to get through the Leinster final, Tailteann Cup and the under-20s as well. So we're going to take a quick ad break and hopefully get Ross Mullenly back up in the line.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, just before the commercial break there, Ross Mullenly was predicting Derry to win the Ulster title. And then we lost Ross. There must be an Armagh engineer in the building who just cut your line, Ross. But we'll move on to the Leinster final. So you've predicted Derry for Ulster. And that one throws in 4 o'clock in a sold out Clonus. A little bit earlier on Sunday, 1:45 in Croke Park. It is Dublin against Louth. A game that nearly everyone expects Dublin to win. However, if Mickey Hart and Louth can continue the fine form and the development of this team and get Louth off to a flying start, might we have a game on our hands here, or is that asking too much of the wee county?
Let's hope that that's the case, and that Louth can you know, perform to their absolute best and to their capability. But I do think even if they do, that they will come up short. This Dublin team is very focused, in my opinion, on the latter end of the championship. And I guess from their perspective, I've just been watching their team sheets and so on. I think Dublin, of all the teams that we would kind of rate in the top 3-4 for the All-Ireland at the moment, they're using the squad rotation system a lot more than anybody else. And I think they're doing that because they know all too well that you've got the All-Ireland series coming up. That's 3 games and possibly 4 before you get to a quarter-final, and then you'd have 3 more. So Dublin know they're looking at probably 6 to 7 more games after the Leinster final. And I think for that reason, they have been trying players like Newcomb, Murphy, Ross McGarry, Baskell, these kind of guys, trying to find positions for them and trying to bring in new players. And I kind of feel actually at the moment that Desi Farrell is in a bit of a no-win situation when he doesn't start his first team. People are questioning, where are the first 15 and where are the established players and why aren't they playing and so on. And then when he does start them, people are asking, well, where are all the new players he's trying to bring in and so on. So I think it's a funny one, just observing it as a neutral at the moment. But my overriding feeling with Dublin is that they're rotating, they're trying to play as many players as possible. And I think we probably won't see Dublin playing their strongest team for at least another 3-4 weeks when we get further or closer to the quarterfinals.
Well, it certainly will be interesting to see what response Dublin will give, given their below par performance against Kildare, and if Loud can spring a surprise against the Dubs in Croke Park on Sunday. Ross, I did want to pick your brain on the under 20 final, because tomorrow's under 20 All-Ireland final brings together two tribes that have been working relentlessly towards their respective goals for some time. It's the first under 20 decider for the 8th County and only the 5th time ever for a Sligo team to reach an All-Ireland final in any grade, and not forgetting that their senior side reached the Connacht senior final this season, of course, and will soon return to the business end of the round robin series of the All-Ireland Championship that you mentioned there, Ross, that the Dubs will be looking ahead to as well. Kildare have been foraging desperately hard to get a national title at this level. The county has just won 6 All-Irelands across senior under 21/20 and minor. So two teams, two exciting young teams here, Ross. What are the main talents of these groups, and how do you see this under 20 final going?
Yeah, I think probably if I kind of thought that Down might beat Kildare, on the last day out that Kildare wouldn't be strong enough, and I think a big moment in that game was a fairly long injury to Fionn Cook, which took a little bit of time to treat him at the time, and then his direct replacement Sean Finn came in and kicked the score almost straight away, and that led to 3 unanswered points for Kildare that really brought them back into the game. So I think they got a bit of a momentum swing from that, and like their composure to finish out the game. Like Jack McKevitt, I know the shot is probably what a lot of people would call low percentage score outside of the left boot and wrong side of the field and so on. And it was, but it was just a magical score and a score deserving to win a game of that nature. I think it's going to be a smashing game. It's Kildare's second final in a row, which shows that the conveyor belt is well and truly up in operation for them, and a lot of work being carried out. I spoke with the Sligo PRO Pádraic McKeown earlier on, and he was telling me that 27 of the 43 man squad for this Sligo group are underage again next year, and I think that translates into possibly 11 of the 15 starting lineup, which shows just the young talent within that group. So when you look at statistics like that, you'd imagine that Kildare will probably have the physical advantage with maybe more players playing in their final year at the group. But there's just something about Sligo at the moment. They had brilliant success with Summerhill College earlier on this year, getting to the Hogan Cup final. 6 of that team will be involved tomorrow. Dylan Walsh at wing forward has been man of the match in 2 of the last 3 games, I think it is. And Luke Marin has hit 38 points in all competitions. And so it's so hard to predict underage football, and it's going to be a magnificent occasion for both of them in Breffni Park tomorrow. Sligo absolutely buoyed by their first ever win against Kerry last weekend, which was incredible for them. But I do hope that the Fionn Cook, who got that injury for Kildare, because it's such a short turnaround, I hope he makes it back onto the field tomorrow night. And I'm just going to go with Sligo on this one, even though Kildare may be more dominant in the physical stakes. Just think there's a momentum behind Sligo at the moment, and but again, I think we're going to see just a fascinating game of football.
Okay, we'll be interested to see how that one goes. 1:30 throw-in in Breffni Park live on TG Cahir. Ross, let us just rattle through the Tailteann Cup because time is against us. So we're going to task you with one sentence predictions for each of the 8 matches. So we're going to start with your own Laois. Cavan Laois and Breffni at 4 p.m. How do you see this one going?
I think Laois will put quite a bit on the scoreboard. I think they'll score a goal, and they'll probably hit 15 or 16 points in the game. But I think the away game, with Cavan being such an effective team, I think Cavan might sneak it. But Mayon County will be right there till the end, and excuse me, wouldn't surprise me if we did sneak it. But certainly Cavan are favourites.
Okay, close one, possibly Cavan. 4 p.m. tomorrow, 6 p.m. tomorrow in Newry, Down against Waterford. prediction for this one, Ross?
I've no doubt in my mind on this one. I think Down, as good as they were in those for Championship, they'll be stronger now with their under-20s back. They've got Murdoch, McGill, McCarthy, Savage, four guys that played earlier on this season for them. They're stronger than they were in the Ulster Championship, as I say, and I think they will be quite convincing at home to Waterford.
Okay, two home wins. Limerick-Longford then, 6 o'clock in the Gaelic grounds. Are you going for another home win?
Yeah, this is the one I was looking at. I've circled pretty much all home wins in this one. I guess because Limerick were beaten by 23 points against Kerry on their last day out, and because Longford were so competitive against Offaly, who in turn were really competitive in the Leinster semi-final against Loud, possibly a Longford win. It's probably the only away win that I would look at this weekend.
Okay, and that would mean then Meath should have the better of Tipperary, Hassocks and Park Tolchin?
I think so. Home advantage, monster pressure on Meath and Colm O'Rourke, and I think they'll have enough to get the job done against Tip.
Okay, Sunday, 1 o'clock, Brewster Park, Fermanagh, Wexford. We're going with Fermanagh here, Ross?
We're going with Fermanagh, but I'm going to make special mention to a young under-20 player from Wexford, Keane Hughes. He was a huge loss to Wexford when they played Laois in the opening round of the Championship, Leinster Championship, because of that under-20 rule that they're not allowed to play two games in a week. An exciting young talent, fantastic young player, but I think Fermanagh will have too much for them.
Okay, then Antrim and Leitrim, 1 o'clock in Belfast.
Yeah, such a difficult place to go. I played there myself a couple of years ago. It's really difficult. Antrim are really good at home, and Leitrim will be very disappointed. I'll go for the home win, but any team with Keith Byrne in it always has a chance. So Leitrim will be there or thereabouts.
Okay, very briefly, I'm going to throw the final two fixtures at you. Offaly, London at 2 o'clock and Wicklow, Carlow at 4 o'clock. Ross, predictions for those?
No disrespect to London. I just think Offaly will be too strong for them. They'll be very disappointed with the couple of players leaving the squad during the week, obviously for their own reasons, maybe going travelling and so on. And that's the big thing about this Talton club. We don't know as of yet how many of the squads have a full panels to pick from and so on. But I know Offaly will just be too strong for London at home this weekend. And then the final one, my good neighbours in Carlow, I give them a chance, but Wicklow under Oisin McConville have just been really, really impressive, and they've a fantastic full forward line complemented by Dean Healy, who can play anywhere on the pitch, and I'd fancy them just because they're at home in Aucklin.
Okay, great. So for Ross Munley, thank you very much for taking the call. We're going to be chatting hurling next with Shane McGrath.
Game on.
Hurling.
Now, Shane McGrath is on the line to chat hurling. And Shane, I think we're both going to be struck off Donlogue's Christmas card list because we're going to have to rattle through this hurling preview. Unfortunately, however, there is a big one on Saturday. Tomorrow evening, 6 o'clock, Thurles, Waterford against Clare. Waterford desperately in need of a win. Clare looking to continue that good form that we saw against Limerick. What are the key battles in this one and how do you see it going?
I think Clare win. I think they're in a great place. Will they get to the same level as Limerick? They mightn't, but they mightn't have to. It's supposed to be a lovely day. Waterford crowd don't seem to be supporting this team at the moment for whatever reasons, but the Clare crowd definitely will. Key battles, I think it'll come down to, are they going to man-mark Tony Kelly or not? Tip did it and it worked. Will Waterford do it? Maybe Conor Gleeson or Caelan Lyons might do it, but I know we have to keep it tidy, so I'll wrap it up by my opinion saying I think Clare are in a great place. And Brian Lowen has the strongest panel he's been able to have as a manager in 4 years. And I think all those things, Shane, I think they'll win.
You mentioned that Waterford mightn't be well supported. And Brendan Cummins was mentioned on the GA podcast as well that they need a big, big support there. They need that crowd if they are to get over the line. Like, what's lacking? Is there a disconnection?
Yeah, I tell you, there's a few things I'd say. Look, underage, they haven't actually won a match in Munster at minor under 20 level or senior level this year. Their senior team have only won one match in 14 round robin games. They've had one win and one draw. I just think that there isn't the same support for the group. I feel that their home games are in Thurles. It's not as easy to get to Thurles as it is the Fraher Field or down in Waterford for a lot of the Waterford people. And I just think they just feel... I'll be honest, I think the Waterford supporters feel that they just, it's not in them to go and support this team at the moment, which is very sad because, you know what, we have it in Tip a small bit as well and we're actually going all right. So I really hope the Tip crowd get out there in a couple of weeks' time to support them in Thurles against Limerick. Like.
It's probably been said it's a lack of consistency for Clare has been a big issue for them. Do you feel that this is an opportunity for them to put that right now and get back-to-back big wins in the Munster Championship?
Yeah, it is. Look, and when it comes to round robin, they're leading the pack. They've won the most round robin games since they came in, Shane. Like, but I just think their forward line, Peter Duggan, Tony Kelly, Ed McCarthy, Ryan Taylor, Shane O'Donnell and Mark Rogers, with the likes of Aaron Shanahan and Shane Meehan and Ian Galvin to come on. That is the strongest forward line that Brian Lowen has ever had an opportunity to pick from. So I think, like, whatever went on before, there was always one or two guys were injured or out. Now he has everybody there. He has everyone ticking. And I think that's where the advantage lies in him.
Okay, well, you'll be previewing Tip Limerick with us next Friday, and we'll ring fence some more time. You'll be chatting to Marie next Friday. I do apologise for cutting you short. But Shane McGrath, thank you very much for joining us. Just to mention Joe McDonough, fixtures, it is Kildare v Down, Carlow v Offaly, and Kerry v Laois. Carlow, Kerry, and Laois all vying for that final spot, with Offaly and Kildare and Down looking to avoid the drop to the Christie Ring. Sinead, big thank you to Laura Lee Davis, Ronan Lawler. I've been Shane Dawson. Thank you to all our guests. Thank you to you for listening. Blondin Tracy's up next.